Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Use the promo code Locked On for $10 off your first box at BuiltBar.com. This is part four of our six-part series discussing race and justice reform in America with former Warriors players over the last six decades. I'm joined today by Clifford Ray, who played for the Warriors from 1974 to 1981. Clifford, thanks for being on, and to get started, I want to know how you've dealt with not having sports in your life for the last few months.
I'm retired, so I didn't really, I don't know how to explain this, but I like sports, but I'm not like a guy who, you know, I do a lot of other things, and so I had been doing some consulting work whenever they, you know, Warrior gave me a little something to do this year, and I came out. Spend some time with the G League team, the guys on the G League, the young kids. And, you know, I'm always open to doing stuff like that. But consulting, setting yourself up as a consultant doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get those opportunities just because other people get them. So I am open to do that whenever I get an opportunity, but that hasn't been the case. I've had a couple of good opportunities, one with the Houston Rockets, Golden State, and also did a little work with New York when Keith Smart and Tiz Fizdale was with the team, but they got fired. So. And then all of the pandemic broke out.
How did you react to the initial video of George Floyd's death and then the protests that we're seeing now?
I think that what has happened is, guys are seeing things because they haven't been, you know, when you're working as an NBA player or any NBA player or any professional, whether it's baseball, basketball, or football, you know, your life is so surrounded by what you're doing and your professional perspective profession. So if if it's football, you have a certain amount of things that are daily on your agenda and that you're consumed by. And one of them is by getting in the best condition you can get in, being prepared to go into your sport each year so that you don't get an opportunity to be in the regular mainstream to address problems that have gone on. And every once in a while, someone does address something. And then, you know, a shitstorm always comes up. So, you know, it's been interesting seeing all the events of things that have gone on through this pandemic. And one of them being this the many incidents. I've seen them all my life. I'm a lot older than all these kids. And they have no idea of the things that went on when I was coming up as a kid, as a young person, you know, I can remember being arrested, picked up, arrested in normal, arrested, but, you know, we got picked up because there was a Jim Crow law that blacks are supposed to be off the street at 6 o'clock after dark, before dark, over there. And it's a funny story, actually. They had told us about it. I mean, not when I say they. Some of the kids in the dorm, you know, all the kids, they talk about, you know, like we all, basketball players was on one floor, wrestling on the third floor, and the other three floors were all football, you know. And we were the ones that lived in Washington House at the University of Oklahoma. So you hear things, you know, and they was telling us, hey, you guys need to not be on the street late at night because you'll get picked up because it's a law. They called it Jim Crow law or whatever. And so we were at a party, and they were kind of getting out of control, drinking or whatever. So one of my teammates and I, we were like, hey, we're going home. So, you know, but we didn't want to be up all night. We were new. And we weren't town. I'm definitely was from a small town. And, you know, so we headed home. So then we saw, we were walking, and then the police was on the other end of the, coming up a different way. And we kind of ran and got underneath the pipe. You know how you go across a little bridgeway where the, like certain streets will have bridgeway where not a big bridge, but just a right. little thing where the water runs through the drainage pipes.
Right.
So we hid out underneath that. We hid out underneath that. And then, we thought they had gone. So we headed home, tried to beeline at home. Anyways, we got picked up, and then they, of course, they took us to the dorm. But just the fact that, you know what I mean, it wasn't always as bad. People, things that happen, yeah, you know, you remember it, especially in the situation why you always being singled out or for the various reasons.
Did you hide because you were scared of getting caught, or were you hiding because you were scared of your safety?
Well, you never know what a situation could be. I've been in several volatile situations in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was in Chicago when my senior year, I was drafted I got drafted by the Chicago Bulls. And so I was, every time I would go to practice, we hadn't started the season, but we were doing workouts at the Lawson YMCA every day. And so I had to come in, go to downtown, into downtown Chicago. And I had a Lincoln Continental with a white top. It was blue, kind of royal blue and white. So, you know, I always wore hats. So if you in a car like that and you got a hat on, unless you a white person, you probably don't get stopped back in my day, in my era. So I did. I got stopped almost every 2 or 3 days. I got stopped.
Wow.
And so I was, and this is an interesting story. When I was sitting there getting dressed after workout one day, and there was a little guy. I mean, he wasn't tall, super tall, but he was kind of stocky, fat. Not fat, but, you know, he's a big guy, mm-hmm. an older guy. And he asked me, how did I like the city? And I said, and I didn't know who he was. I had no clue. And so I told him, I said, well, it's a big city. Not for my first time being in a city this big. But I said, but, you know, I get stopped a lot. I said, you know, and he was saying, get stopped a lot. And I was like, yeah, you know, I got a Lincoln Continental. I guess Lincoln Continentals and Cadillacs are cars that, you know, if you're a black person, people stop or whatever. And that's how I had been told that. We always was told that growing up, especially my hometown. And that's why everybody wanted to drive a Cadillac. I picked the Lincoln because I thought, well, if I get a Lincoln, maybe I'm going to get stopped as much as I would get stopped as a Cadillac. That was my motivation for getting a Lincoln Continental.
Wow.
And he said, well, you got a Chicago place or you have an Oklahoma place? And I said, well, I have an Oklahoma place because I just came from, you know, just got out of college and drove up there. So I guess he must have went out there and got my plate or something, because about 2 or 3 days, maybe 3 days later, I got stopped. And I got out of his car, came over to the car and looked in, and he said, you Clifford Ray? And I said, yeah. And he said, I ran your license plate. He said, you need to slow down a little bit and on the outer drive, on the loop. And I was like, well, I was kind of, maybe might have been running a little fast. I was trying to get to practice because I was going to work out. So I was a few minutes, not late, but I didn't want to be
Right.
So anyways, so from that point on, if I did get stopped, nothing happened. But I never got stopped as often as I did before. And so I was kind of asking, I said, I asked the guy who worked me out, and said, there was a guy talking to me the other day, and I said, he was asking me about my license plate number. And I said, do you know who he is? And they all started laughing. And I, you know, I was like, well, you know, what's the big mystery? Everybody's laughing. But they didn't realize I was a rookie. I just came to Chicago, so I had no idea who this guy was. Anyways, it was Matt Daly. So that was one of my stories in my book about different things that happened to you as a minority person. And then another incident happened. I was over on the north side where the actress, I forget her name, the redheaded lady, she played in a movie with Elvis Presley.
Okay. I'm no good with actresses.
Okay. Well, anyhow, she's from Chicago, Skokie area.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was going over to their house. Her mom's in the house to have dinner because they invited me over to dinner. And I had a sweat, you know, like a bull sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. Shirt. They didn't have hoods like they do now. I just had a towel, through my sweatshirt. So it looked like it was kind of over half of my head. But anyways, so the guy stops me and I get out of the car, and he was a young guy, and he freaked out because I was so big over him, and he just pulled his gun. And so I had to, you know, really be calm. I said, look, you know, my name's Clifford Ray. I'm with the Chicago Bulls. Well, you know, I bet you could ask a lot of different players, and they've had an experience like that in some way or form. I've had several of them, not just one, but I've had at least three in my lifetime.
That's unbelievable. We'll be right back with Clifford Ray, but in these uncertain times when we can't get to the store or go to our favorite restaurant, we often end up searching the deepest depths of the kitchen for a snack. Stop settling for a bag of chips and other unhealthy snacks. Instead, reach for something healthy and delicious. They're called Built Bars. This is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, a protein bar covered in 100% real chocolate. Built Bar tastes like a candy bar while giving you fewer sugars and carbs, making it better tasting and better for you than any of the competitors. With 16 amazing flavors like peanut butter chocolate, mint brownie, and my personal favorite, orange chocolate cream, Built Bar is like a cheat code for health-conscious men and women. These bars are low calorie and low sugar, while also being high in protein and fiber, making them perfect for ketogenic and other low-carb diets. When you're on the move, when you're on the go, always bring a Built Bar with you. It's filling, it tastes good, it's the perfect option for those who are trying to be health-conscious and just need to snack. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. And if you're like me, you tried to make the most of this pandemic by buying a bunch of books that you swore you would read, and now your reading list has only gotten longer. At least that was until I found this great tool called Blinkist. While juggling things like working from home, cooking, and childcare, it can be hard to find the time to read. That's where Blinkist comes in. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction titles, and condenses them down into a quick 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. It works on your phone, your tablet, and your web browser. It's perfect for when you want to get the main points of a book quickly so that you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book when you break for lunch, work around the house, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, accessing a massive and growing library. Self-help, business, health, history, bestsellers, classic nonfiction titles. Blinkist has the books you've always meant to read but never had the time to. And right now and for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. And try it free for 7 days, and if you love it, you could save 25% when you sign up for a new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-I-L-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial and save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. I hear these stories, and some of the stories that I'm hearing from other players who played in your era, just, you know, about just the constant, you know, buying a car and then getting pulled over, and always having to have that on your mind when you go out, let alone, you know, having a gun pulled on you, for goodness sakes. But when you see what's happening now, does it feel at all different to you versus what was happening before, as far as the protests goes, as far as the amount of movement we've made on this issue?
Well, you know, I'll tell you exactly what is discouraging. What is discouraging is when something happens, whether it be a disaster, like if there's a hurricane or some kind of disaster where people's lives are affected, like what happened in Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. or any place. You see the outpour of help from everybody that's trying to, you know, assist, you know, and I know they all have good intentions and stuff, but I always say, why don't each group, whether it be baseball or football or basketball, acting, people in the acting community, if every community were to do away with some of their injustices toward blacks, then it would be, we would have a better world, number one. But until we stop, you know, acting like you don't see the things that go on. I mean, you know, that the things that go on in this day and age is almost embarrassing. You know, and when I say embarrassing, that some people makes them mad, but to me, I've seen people get killed and disappear. So that's not it's a whole different ball game, because I was brought up in the South, in the Deep South. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had colored and white drinking fountains, you know, or when I went to school at the University of Oklahoma, I was told that we could have a black star. We weren't going to have, so he wasn't going to allow you, even if you could be the star, like, I could have led the nation in rebounding, but they weren't going to let me lead the nation in rebounding because I didn't play but 20-something minutes a game. Mm. And they could always control you by how you played. You could just look at all kinds of things that are going on. You tell me how I'm supposed to understand going to college from a small town of maybe 1,500 people, and then they tell me, you're going to be the first freshman to start in the individual football. And then I go to get to the school and find out that they don't even let you play as a freshman. Then they say, oh, I go to the basket on a driveway and dunk, and I get penalized. They said, the basket's no good, you know, because it was a scrimmage. It wasn't like a real game. But if it would have been a real game and I'd have done that, we'd have lost the game. Now, how do you explain, if you ask the NCAA, how do you explain to them? I mean, how do they explain to you that they can take out a skill? Like, I mean, if you can, you have great balance, great footwork, you can get up off the floor and change direction, put the ball in one hand, the other hand, and dunk. And then they say, well, you can't do that. That's one of your skill sets that you're just allowed to do. So what are they saying? They're trying to slow down the process. That's why the whole thing about, you know, when they sent you, instead of you going to a college right off the bat, they send you to a junior college so they could observe you. And before they let you go to Carolina, I left South Carolina. I should have been able to go to Carolina. I should have been able to go to North Carolina or Duke or any one of those schools. But that wasn't the case when I came out in 1967.
When you see then, you know, players these days taking a stand on social issues, when you see a LeBron James, a Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, these guys just sort of taking stands, do you think about like just that amount of progress that's been made? It's been a really long time. I mean, granted, you know, 50, 60 years in a lot of cases, but does that give you hope when you see something like that?
Well, I have to have hope, because if I stop having hope, then, you know, then I'm going to be just like the rest of these people out there, you know, causing a problem or something or whatever, you know, because if you sooner or later you're going to fight back, you know what I mean? It's like you can't just keep doing the same thing to someone over and over, generation to generation, and I expect at some point that people are going to want to react. And hopefully you want them to react the way, you know, Martin Luther King and some of our great black leaders who put their lives on the line and even given their lives. You know, because anytime if someone, it would be just like if I went out and somebody gave me some airtime and I told my story of what happened to me from the time that I went from college, the NCAA, to the NBA, and told all the things that were injustices that were done, then, you know, if everybody, guys that probably, like LeBron James, people who knew that I coached in the NBA or whatever, and then all of a sudden, they said I need to prove that I coached in the NBA. How would that look? I mean, doesn't that look that like we're not involved? We're not trying to be helpful to one another. So yeah, they're gonna speak up about it, but half the time they don't even know, because they keep us all so isolated as athletes. So we don't really, you know, we were involved socially in things because it was a big change, and that's why I laugh at. I mean, I think it's weird when people don't realize what athletes have done in terms of the bridging the gap to people, for people to get along and to try to, you know, be one nation. You know, that's what is really, really mind-boggling to me, because, you know, we went to school and we subjected ourselves to a lot of abuse. I mean, how would you like to have to go to a major university and you're supposedly on a full scholarship, but you don't have no clothes, and you don't look like all the rest of the students, and you got to cower around because you're ashamed of the lack of clothing, things that you have to make you feel like you're a student like the rest of them. And all they would have, the NCAA would have to do is make sure that when you go to school and you have a full wardrobe of at least two or three sport coats that say the University of Oklahoma, or nice jeans, some sneakers or loafers or whatever. You know, that it don't have to be always about money. Everybody thinks about money like that money. It's not the money. It's about, you know, treating another human being the same as you treat your own.
How do you think that now professional athletes can help push this movement forward, to push this equality forward?
By you know, being true to themselves and speaking out about it. You know, like, don't, I mean, if you, and how you do that is look at your own home base. What's going on in your own home base that you can speak out about that might have to do with the same thing? It's all the same thing. I mean, if somebody put their foot on your neck and hold you down, and you got other people standing there watching, and they got the same uniform you got on, and they don't think that's an injustice. I mean, it's like you see it all the time. You know, everybody knows there's a difference. We act like we don't know what goes on. You know, the guys in the press, whether, I don't care if they're black or white, they don't speak out about it. They might speak out about it if it gets like it is now. Now everybody wants to talk about, you know, these injustices. Mm-hmm. But these injustices have been, you know, you can't even count the people that have lost their lives for nothing.
What are your conversations like with friends and family now? Is it hopeful? Is it frustrating? What are your private conversations usually about now?
My private conversations are, it's hopeful because people that I probably grew up with, like people down south that I grew up with, a lot of people write me, have written to me. Like, for example, I got this letter from a lady, a couple, man and his wife, I guess, a woman, and she wrote to me at my home, and she apologized for screaming out racial comments during a basketball game that I was at playing at or coaching at or whatever in Utah, playing against the Jazz. And she said that was wrong, and she always felt bad about it, blah, blah, blah. But then that incident came out about what somebody had been said, that someone had said something in the stands, and, they called out. It was very racial or whatever. So that was a big discussion on all the media and outlet about, people abusing their, that whole thing about people and using that as an excuse to direct racial slurs or comments. And she apologized. And this was, I don't know how many years ago that I played. And obviously it weighed on her mind to where she found my address, wherever she did, and was able to send me a nice letter. Well, when you get things like that, I get a number of things from people, especially down south, and they'll say, they really admire the things that I went through and then still went accomplished what I accomplished. I got through all those things, being in a town that was totally segregated, black water fountains, black and white restrooms. We went to the prom one night. We had a prom. After prom, you always take your date and go get something to eat. And that place was called the Horse Drive-In. It was a really nice drive-in restaurant, drive-up restaurant. And we drove in to go eat a hamburger and milkshake or whatever. They had all kinds of food. But anyhow, it was the nicest one in my little town. And they wouldn't serve us. And we were in tuxedos, and the girls were in long dresses and everything, and they were not serious. And so all these things change as a result of the things that we did continuously as we were growing up. Now we didn't get killed for them, but if we had not been in the community and they knew our parents. Like a lot of times when I would do something stupid, like go to if I went to a street dance, in South Carolina they have a lot of street dances and things like that. Well, those street dances were for white only. And I knew all the kids that were singing because I was on the band. So they would always want me to come to perform with them. So I'd be out there dancing or whatever, and they'd be wanting to, some of them, the redneck kids that were from the mill, they want to kill us. and the police would say, "Oh, that's Clifford Ray, son." My dad was the first black policeman in the state of South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And he was told that he could not arrest a white person. And one night my dad chased some white guy, tore his pants, but he caught him and arrested him. It was on front page of the paper.
We'll be right back with Clifford Ray, but with an ever-increasing number of vehicle makes and models, it can be impossible to stock all the parts you need, especially now while you may not be able to or willing to visit a traditional store. So do it easily online at rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low without the markup you find at chain stores. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all of the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Your dad being a policeman, what are your thoughts on just general reform that has to happen within police departments? There's been a lot of conversation right now about banning chokeholds. Obviously, that's a start, but it seems to be, you know, very far from the solution.
There's no excuse when you are a public servant. Whether you're a if you're a public servant, meaning that if you're a fireman, you're a policeman, you are, you know, a doctor, whatever you are that you serve the public, then your whole, especially as a policeman, your job is to save lives, not end lives. Mm-hmm. You can't excuse yourself around that. Yeah, if you had to, if there was a shootout and there was a bank robbery and somebody had passed, what if somebody had shot somebody? Like, think about all of the shootings that have happened in the high schools. When they shot up those high schools, did they kill those guys?
Mm-mm.
I just want to know how many of them did they kill? The kid that did something. Did they kill them?
Right.
Or did they shoot themselves or whatever?
Right.
I'm saying, like, there's been way more atrocities that happen, and so how do you excuse, find excuses when it's more than one policeman in a group, and somebody comes up dead?
Right.
That you just can't keep making excuses. There's no excuse for it, especially when your job is to, you know, to serve the public and to prevent things from happening. If you can prevent a murder, don't you think that's your job as a policeman? My dad was a policeman, so I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, these things are not, you know, that it's just, you know, when I see stuff like that, I just go, well, at some point the world's going to have to address all this stuff one way or another, just like every organization is going to have to address how they treat it. People, and whether you treated people equally, the same. That's all it's about. I've been saying this since I've been in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, can we get treated the way our teammates who are white get treated? Can we have the same opportunities to succeed or fail as they do? Every player that I played with, if he was white, you look at his career in the sports world compared to, you know, my sports career, I'm proud of it. I don't have no to hold my head down about it at all. But it still was a struggle. Right. And it's still a struggle.
When you hear people say Black Lives Matter, and then somebody responds with All Lives Matter, how does that make you feel? What's your reaction when you hear something like that?
When All Lives Matter?
Yeah, when people respond with an All Lives Matter.
Well, I think that they're right too. All lives do matter. You can't put a value on somebody's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you're already gonna make the transition. So you don't need anybody to come in and decide, okay, well, you know, I'm finna get rid of you now, or whatever. Well, you're gonna die anyways at some point. You're gonna get old and you're gonna pass away. Whatever happens, that's what's gonna happen in a natural course of things. But there's also times things can happen, like you can have an accident or you have a car wreck or any kind of disaster can happen. But I still think that those things that happen that takes a person's life from them, you know, at the end of the day, someone's life and they don't have no control, rendering them uncontrolled, but where they don't have no control, and then you just decide, okay, I'm gonna shoot you. You know, that's a big, I mean, you have to have a whole lot of issues going on to just take someone's life and be that, you know, be that force coming to just go out there and just put your foot on somebody and choke them to death or do whatever you do. I mean, the other day, I shot somebody in the back twice, a couple of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and the poor guy, I mean, yeah, he should have probably shouldn't have run. But even if he did run, you got many ways that you can take somebody. If somebody running, they definitely can run and shoot you if they run it.
Right.
You know, so, you know, my dad chased a lot of people when he was, and in a little small town we lived in, you know, and sometimes it was always, and a lot of times you already knew who all the criminals were in a small town. That's why I tell people, I grew up in the South, but I would not trade where I grew up in for nothing in the world, because one thing I can always say about my hometown, you knew who didn't like black people. It wasn't, where they smile, oh, you know, Coach Ray, you're great, you know, so and so and so and so. And then now if they got to pay you, then they all, now it's a whole different story. You can't get the same as that other person, or you can't get the same opportunity. You know, there was an article just not too long ago about all the big black kids, guys, but, well, because a lot of the black athletes in basketball were black. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now we got the world is catching up, so we have players from all over the world that's playing in the NBA, like Donnie from Dallas,
mm-hmm.
Kid Luke from Denver. I mean, there's kids that are white kids that can play ball, you know, and so it's changed the world. The world changes and people get better at crafts and things like that. So what I'm saying is that it has to get to a point where you clean up your own backyard first. If you do that, then everybody else does that, follows suit. And then that's one thing about this pandemic. It has made people a little bit more humble because they don't have no control. They don't know if they're going to get sick. They don't know if they do get sick, are they going to die? Yeah. You know, so when all these kind of things happen to you, now you start to see the things that take place that made people speak out, like what happened, you know, about Black Lives Matter. Well, you know, this happened at a time where everything was polarized in the first place. So now, you know, people say we'll die. You know, like, when is this stuff going to get better?
What's your thought on the NBA coming back? Because there seems to be a debate about whether or not, you know, an NBA playoffs would distract from what we're seeing from this movement, or if, you know, the NBA could somehow help, you know, push this movement forward. Do you think that the NBA can balance returning to the season and also, you know, pushing reform at the same time?
Sports in general is a money making machine. It's a part of the economy, no matter how you look at it. And so there are certain parts of the economy that got shut down. And one of the reasons that it got shut down was because they could not have masses of people together. Otherwise, the pandemic would have been, probably way worse than what it was. But, you know, there's just things that, you know, that everybody has to deal with, but you can't say who's right or who's wrong. I just think that the bottom line is that they're just trying to salvage a season and to play a championship playoff because, you know, everything in sports is about time. Timing is everything. It's just like my first start of coaching. They just paid you what they want to pay you. If you were the head coach, you could just go screw yourself. You know, so now coaches are making $1 million. Mm-hmm. You know, I never made over $200,000, and that was one time. Only one time. Rest of the time, you know, it was just like when I came in as a player, making, you know, $15,000, and then on all rookie team.
Right.
You know, or just like being on winning teams. You know, like I was, when I started coaching, I coached and did everything that they allowed me to do. They wasn't going to never give me no head coach job because I was too tall. And I was, you know, and I'm intimidated. So, of course, you know, guys who own teams, especially if they're a millionaire or a billionaire, they're going to be a little intimidated because, you know, because most big guys speak their mind. You know, we don't really candy-coat things. We just tell it like it is. So you never know. You know, you don't see nobody coaching but dogs. That's what you see.
No. Right, yeah.
Yeah, we have all this stuff in every walk of life. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, somebody got your foot on your neck no matter what, wherever you are. Thank God the NBA ain't killed everybody and these other sports teams. So, you know, we just, the things that's been happening is the injustices that have to do with law enforcement, the things that have gone on with law enforcement. And I just think that they just have to do a better job of screening. And if someone, if you have a background and you know who you are, I mean, you know, when they hire people, they always tell you, you know, you might be a good person, a good policeman, but we're going in a different direction. They quick to tell you that. So they need to do the same thing in that screening. If you know that a person has some problems with race and whatever, you mean, you should hire that guy. He should not be hired because he's going to have to deal with Hispanics, you're going to have to deal with Chinese people, you're going to have to deal with Jewish people, you're going to have to deal with every race of people. And so you have to be able to take the oath as an officer to save lives. If you're not in there for that reason, number one, and then to prevent and protect the public, the you know, people. So you can protect people if you're taking lives. And what are they going to feel like? They don't feel like all of a sudden suppose everybody just start carrying guns around. It'll be chaos.
Right. Well, I appreciate you answering my questions, and I thank you so much for sharing your insight and those stories. I really appreciate it.
Okay. I hope I can help you. I try to talk about it. I wish that it wasn't always about death, you know, when somebody lost their life, and then, you know, we get on in and we talk about what we're going to do. It's just like it always upsets me when we have Martin Luther King. We celebrate Martin Luther King's week, and then the NBA talks about all the things that, you know, happened. Well, what about the things that present black athletes are doing to try to change the world? You know, talk about, show those guys. We all know about, everybody knows about what Martin Luther King has meant to our Malcolm X, all Vandel, all these great people. What we need to do is to focus on how are we making the world as it is now better. What can we do as each group or profession, whether doctors, lawyers, whatever, if all those groups treat things fairly, do things right, be accountable, you know, and start making excuses why you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah, and like you, I just hope that we have more unity going forward with this, because that's probably the only way anything's going to change for good.
Yeah, we got to get away from it. Until we look at each other as Americans or people of the world, you know, we have to do that. We just can't keep doing what we're doing.
Thanks again to Clifford Ray for joining the show. This was part 4 of our series. You can go back and listen to parts 1 through 3
on the podcast feed. Parts 5 and 6 will go up next week. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, where you can rate us, review us, and say nice things about us. Use the promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first box of Built Bars at builtbar.com. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.